Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, I'd. Loan Repair Station Jacks. I'm tonight. We just met over aboard SP Futures. Down 3. NASDAQ Futures on 27. Dow Futures on 28. That's after a huge up day yesterday. So just a little bit of a give back here. Worry too much about where we are right now. It's not how you start, it's how you finish, right, Manny?
That's right.
As they say. Brennan, how are you?
I'm doing fine today, Chief. Boy, lots to talk about. You know, we've got Supreme Court, we've got tax deferrals or non-payment, we've got the big news with the Bears and Nick Foles taking over Trubisky.
Yep.
As Maddie pointed out before the show, we've got the White Sox playing a meaningful game in October and the Cubs are playing in the playoffs as well. Big day, big week.
Now, is tomorrow is the middle game the visitors' home game, or are all visitors' games?
What do you mean? Some games are starting today. The Sox are playing today.
I mean, are the Sox visitors all three games, or have they been doing the...
Oh, I don't know. I think they are staying in Oakland for the three games, and I don't know if they shift back and forth between first...
No, I mean, do they get to bet second one of the games like they were doing in the... Makeups.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Do you know, Manny?
I'm looking it up right now because I don't know. I would assume that I know the home team is hosting all three games in the best of three, but mm-hmm. I would assume they let the visiting team bet last at least once. So let me check it.
Yeah.
Did I get to use the other guy's dugout and eat the better food?
Yeah. You get the better. That way, it certainly reduces the risk of COVID because you're using the same, you're alternating locker rooms as well. With the good batting cages and the tunnels and stuff like that.
Yeah, well,
speaking of baseball, did you see that Jay Johnstone died?
No, COVID? I did not. Wow. From COVID? Wow.
Yeah.
I'll bet there was something else there, but I don't know.
Well, he had dementia, but he apparently died of COVID-related causes.
Wow. That's a shame. Did Gale Sayers have a wake?
I didn't hear about that. I did not hear about a wake for Gale Sayers.
They're kind of light on these wakes these days. One of the guys from
Trinidad
was very popular. I mean, didn't they, even in the Iliad, when the guy dragged the kid around behind the horse after
he
killed him?
They put him on a pyre. They put him on a pyre, and they all were there.
But I mean, didn't they eventually let the guy have his funeral? I mean, even people thousands of years ago were smart enough to let people bury their dead, and yet Lori and Jay can't do that, right?
Yeah. The interesting thing was, I remember when Brian Piccolo died. I actually was in Ireland that summer when he died, but I remember the stories about his funeral and his wake. His wake was on the southwest side around 7th and Kedzie, and people were lined up around the block for Piccolo.
I went to Dougie's wake, Buffon's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were pretty good friends at one time before... When he was down doing, trying to be on the trading floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wandered off into, I don't think anybody really saw much as you the last year or two. This dementia is, there's a guy, well, somewhat of an odd story, but I knew that there, it's a big family in Evergreen Park, right? Well, not to give the name, but, one of the, brothers was my age, so we used to play basketball all the time, and he either got drafted or something. He ended up going to Vietnam, so I kind of lost track of his. His younger brother is a real good friend of, he happens to be my brother's brother-in-law, but he also was on the trading floor and was on my committees and stuff, real good guy. Anyway, there's another brother there someplace. He was always a little odd. When he got older, he had some issues, And they ended up, when he died, which is young, they ended up sending his, where do you send your brain, to Boston, maybe, or someplace out there you send it? And this guy played high school ball, and he played college ball at, like, Penn or someplace, not even, you know, a factory. And he had came back and said he had the, whatever, the football disease really bad. That's from, like, an Ivy League, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's way more around than you think. Of course, in those days, mm-hmm. your helmet was, you had a rope in the side going around. All it did was prevent your head from hitting the side of the helmet, really. There was hardly any pads, right? But still,
mm-hmm. right.
But still, everybody played on grass fields. The uniform was heavy, so you almost couldn't hit anybody that hard, really. I mean, I suppose the difference in weight of it, matter of fact, what's his name gave the, I don't know, one of the things I went to when I was in the Economic Club of Chicago a few years ago, it said, there are basketball players now that wear more padding than a football player. if you don't count the helmet, everybody wears shorts, especially in college.
Yeah.
I mean, how that works out when you're supposed to wear knee pads, and then everybody walks out in shorts and nobody ever penalizes anybody. I don't get, but wait, how good are the Chiefs?
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing, we could have had that quarterback.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't know what to do with him, no.
That's probably true. But now we've got Nick Foles.
I read something years and years ago. I was talking to Kevin about it the other night. It said when you get a defensive-minded coach, he will never let the offensive coordinator design something that he can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true or not, but... all right, what about, we got all kinds of other things,
too. Matt Nagy's an offensive coach.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's in that same class, but they're not quite there yet. I mean, I bet the Kansas City defense probably can't stop their offense.
That's true. That's true. Of course, neither can any other defense.
Doesn't appear to be, no. So what, all the kind of crazy stuff that's going on in the world, it's all kind of tying into each other. We still have Fauci demanding that we lock the world down, and meanwhile everybody else is going in the direction that people aren't dying, hospitals aren't open. Let's do something here. I mean, it's still, people are in the same entrenched spot that they were no matter what happens. Does anybody ever change their mind, Brendan, ever? In public life?
You know, I think there's, what I'm hearing is a need for caution, to just be cautious because it could really get out of hand with a combination of flu and coronavirus. I don't think Fauci or people like him are yet arguing for lockdowns as much. It's just a lot of caution and be careful.
What does that even mean? Be careful
back,
of what?
And to go back to the masks and stuff like that.
What does that even mean? Be careful. Cautious.
It means stay away from social gatherings, especially indoors when you've got a lot of people in close contact with each other. And going back to the singles bar scene, if you're young,
even though the bar scene is everybody beats up on, the in Tennessee when Carl had this stuff, he said the big sites are construction sites and nursing homes. You know, half the people in Illinois have died in nursing homes. I mean, this constant, no matter every time there's why, Brendan? I mean, you know, you're a bright guy who's been dealt with numbers your whole life. Why do we have anybody in office, and I hate to use this term, who's ignorant enough to use the amount of positive tests percentage as a guide to anything when you have no control over how many people show up to take the test?
I don't have a good answer to why that is for you, Chief, but I do think that the more numbers of tests that are given, and knowing how much of a percentage of a positive tests are, does have an advantage to know how widespread the disease is.
Brendan,
unless you test everybody, you're right. I agree with you that unless you test everybody on a regular basis, those numbers have a lot less meaning.
And they had a lot less
meaning earlier in the year, when the tests were given only to those who were pretty symptomatic or sick and already showing signs of it, because then you're narrowing the field of those that you test. And we found that the broader the testing is, the lower the percentages are of people who come down with coronavirus.
If you have a system that is working halfway decently. And the people who go for tests either are people that know they were exposed or that had symptoms.
Are you going to increase the positivity rate?
If you use any logic to the method of madness at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that on a nice day, 700 people show up, 40 have symptoms, and 20 have COVID, to me, I can't even... That is so unconscionable to me mentally, I can't even go there.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, if it's raining, and 500 people show up, does that mean you're worse?
That's when you have to look to see what the numbers are, because then you've got a higher positivity rate. If you test 500, you test 700, you're going to have a different positivity rate, even if the same number of people are deemed to be positive, are tested positive.
But you have no control over the top number. If you took all these, I won't say losers, cause I'm sure they're trying to do a good job, that are running around chasing people with the, what do they call them, the trackers?
Mm-hmm.
If you actually picked 100 people at random in every county every day and went out and tested them and you saw those numbers run up and they were actually random samples, then I would have a concern. But just mm-hmm. when people randomly show up, that number does nothing for me, whether it's 3% or 4%. My first question is, why are 97% of people going there if they don't have it?
Well, I don't know how to argue or present an argument to that, Chief. I mean, there are different ways to approach that, but, you know, rather than that, I thought for sure you were going to start off today with either Trump's taxes or the presidential debate tonight.
I'm glad...
He can't get off this coronavirus thing. He can't get off.
Every day, though, there's somebody doing something to somebody someplace. You know, this weekend in Will County, I went to two places, and the guy I'm talking to in a restaurant, he goes, yeah, we were open, then we're closed, then we're open, then we're closed. He goes, finally, I just said, screw it, the last week we just were open.
No restaurants have been told to close since they've reopened.
Yeah, they have. Will County. And then, what's the other county?
The restaurants were just closed?
They closed.
Yeah, they were. Because my daughter was at Mokina, and I noticed there's a restaurant on Green Trail that was forced to close because, there was a bar down the street from them that opened up, and they had several cases of COVID, so they shut them down.
Was it Will County and DuPage, right?
I know that in DuPage County, they definitely rolled back some of the reopening, but I didn't know any restaurants were closed.
Well, you couldn't go inside.
Well, yeah.
I think some of those restaurants were actually closed for about a week or so.
Because they didn't have outdoor seating?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be.
Anyway, you know, why I'm not all over these tax things, Brennan, is it's been a big interest of mine. Actually, I am sort of, because I was sending stuff around last night, but, you know, because what I want, and, you know, here's an assignment for you, because you're a big shot. We got to find somebody. I mean, Kevin and I were talking about this last night. I would love to dig into this Trump tax thing, but I think what's happening is I don't think anybody, including me, understands all the little freebies that only the real estate industry has gotten through the years.
Oh, I agree with you. The real estate industry is one of the most tax, one of the biggest beneficiaries of tax law over the years, and they can make things look like they can make money disappear. I fully understand that, but I think that the big outrage of Trump is the way that he portrays himself as being good for the American public, and yet he's not paying any taxes.
Well,
and I heard an argument the other day that, you know, he's trying to paint Biden and Harris as socialists, and yet isn't his behavior really more socialistic, where he's getting the benefit of all of the assets and all of the programs in the United States, including paved roads, including safety in the air, and yet not contributing a penny
There's three things, and you know I'll shoot this one, and I don't mind, you know, criticize my friend Brendan. He can use it once in a while. Because your wife, of course, is so nice to you that she never gives you any grief.
That's right. Why should she?
First of all, I mean, to say that somebody in real estate doesn't pay any taxes is really screwed up, because when you look at the tax base we have in this country, we have the four-legged stool. We have the income taxes. We have the payroll taxes, we have the state taxes, and we have the state and local. So anybody in real estate is paying through the nose in all the rest of those places, right?
All right. Fair statement on that, that comment that he doesn't pay taxes, that's a fair statement, because I'm sure he has to pay payroll taxes and some other state and local taxes.
But here's where
And sales tax.
Right,
I know he pays sales tax.
Right, so here's where I'd love you to educate me, as my grandmother used to say, my Italian grandmother. If a guy like me, the chief, I'll talk like myself, like a halfback in the NFL, in a third person. If I have a hot dog stand that's a sole prop and a hamburger stand that's a sole prop, and this hot dog stand loses money, I can, because it's all me, okay, I can use the losses from the hot dog stand to take care or to bump against the income from the hamburger stand, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if one of them is Chief Inc. and the other one is Chief and Brendan Inc., and one loses and the other one doesn't, I can't necessarily do that, correct?
Right. That's correct.
And yet, these people in this real estate, and then there's all these at-risk rules,
mm-hmm.
that if you and I put up 100 grand for the hot dog stand, we borrow 800 grand, and we blow out the million, and we tell the bank, see ya, we don't get to deduct 500 apiece, we get to deduct 100, because that's all we lost, because that's all we had at risk. So somehow or another in real estate, and I don't know the answer to this, there's all this crap where if you spend a certain amount of time at each place, it gets to be you can move one to the other. There's none of that stuff in hot dog stands or trading or anything like that. So somehow or another, I don't think Trump obeyed any of those rules, okay, where he actually put the time in at this place and that place. Again, this is where we need an expert, not me. But there's all kinds of these wacky rules to where they said, you know, Trump lost $1 billion in this place. Well, in the hot dog business or in the trading business, if you didn't put the billion in the first place, you didn't lose the billion. You can't use that net operating loss thing, or at least, I mean, way, way, way back in, you know, 82 maybe you could, but you sure can't now. And man, haven't for 35 years. So somehow or another in real estate, you get to move this from one place to the other. And with all these sneaky little rules, like if you put enough time in one place versus another place, you get to move one to the other. I don't think anybody understands that crap. And
well, obviously somebody does, because there's a lot of accountants on Trump's payroll who do.
Well, he's also
to make those claims.
Yeah, but he's also got a $72 million claim back at him from the IRS that he may lose.
Yep.
Right? Correct?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So the IRS
part
is saying
part of the disclosure was that he did get a $72, $73 million tax refund.
He took. There's his return, okay? His view of the story, shall we say. The IRS has looked at it and said, wait a minute. You didn't spend, I think they're saying you didn't spend the 750 hours at the two places, so you don't get to take a loss from A and apply it to B. And oh, by the way, they're at risk rules. So they're saying, our view of your business is you owe us 72 mil. And that is now what? In the courts or in, whatever the hell this IRS court is.
I don't think it's in the courts yet. I think that's still under the audit process to see if they can reclaim it from him.
Okay, but they're going after 72 mil.
Yeah. Well, they're not going after it yet. They're trying to see if it is something that they can go after. That's the whole part of the audit process, that whether or not he is has been unjustly enriched by the amount of the refund.
I don't think it was a refund. He just didn't pay, and they're saying he did pay. He should pay.
No, I think he got a refund that they're challenging right now. That he actually received the check of the $72 million that they're asking whether or not that was legitimate in whole or in part.
Because I think if they dig into it, they're going to find out that he didn't quite make the at-risk rules in some places and use the money. Some of them,
that's true, but I think he also violated some of the deductions. That some of the deductions he claimed without very much verification were improper.
Well, but we don't.
For example, one of the deductions was several hundred thousand dollars that may have been paid to Ivanka while she was a full time employee, and he paid her as a consultant while she was a full time employee.
Which you can do.
Which my understanding is she can't do. If you're a full time employee and you're working for a corporation, they cannot also pay you as a consultant.
I think they
independent
can.
Independent of that.
I think they can.
Not if the, I don't think they can if the consultancy was for things that are within the scope of your employment. Because that takes away things like payroll taxes, because they're treated as an independent person, not as an employee. So there are other ramifications
but,
in there.
Okay, but the person,
I think, discount that.
All right, but the person has to pay more. Correct.
Well, both the company, no, the company has to pay more, would have to pay more too.
Right. Okay.
If you're treated as a consultant, a 1099 consultant, then there are no payroll taxes or withholdings or things like that. It's just the dollar amount that goes to the consultant. It's the consultant's responsibility to make all those payments.
Right, but here's where I could use my bro here, president of PTI Securities, Dan knows all this stuff. If I pay you, if you're an employee of PTI, I believe the Social Security is 6.5 a piece we both pay, right? Something like that, 6.25, 6.5. All right, if I decide you're a consultant, then we have a consulting agreement. I don't pay any of that, but you've got to pay 10, right? The government doesn't get the whole 13, but you actually have to pay more as a consultant than you do as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but what I'm saying is, it is not, because I've actually done this, Brendan, it's perfectly legal for you to have a job at a place to do something as a full-time employee. And at the same time, you might be coming in on Saturday and Sunday and designing a system for him as a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do that. I don't know if he's that straight with it. What I mentioned yesterday, to me, the issue is, if he gave Ivanka a 1099 and said, here's 1099 for $1 million, and Ivanka, you know, took the tax on $1 million and sent it to the IRS, I really don't have a problem with that. Now, if it turns out that he gave her $1 million in Ireland or in the Bahamas or some damn place, and she didn't pay anything, well, then I got a problem, because then neither one of them paid. But in general, somebody's paying.
And we don't have enough facts to know which she did.
Right, but I'm saying, I don't really, as much as, you know, I can't stand the man, I don't want to accuse him of that, because that for somebody that big, that's just stupid. When you're trying to get away with 70 some million dollars, to not 1099.
Well, I'd argue that it is not as stupid as much as it is arrogant.
Well, I mean,
I'm smarter than you are, and I can get away with it.
But if you think you can deduct $1 million for a consultant and not 1099 the person, Jesus.
Well, we don't know if there's a 1099 in there or not, but I mean, the whole concept of what is alleged based on these tax reports is that he cut some corners on his deductions to get to a zero tax base. And as a successful business person, as he has touted himself, he has lost millions and millions of dollars. And while he personally has not gone bankrupt yet, his companies have gone bankrupt 6 times, including a casino in Atlantic City.
Okay, I mean, I feel like I'm defending the guy, but or maybe it's...
Because you are.
Well,
you are.
across the board.
Well, but I'm just saying how, if Ivanka paid the taxes on that, nobody's harmed.
Forget Ivanka.
All right, let the casino.
You're trying to justify again the actions. The other point I'm trying to make here is that he's claiming to be a great big businessman, and he's gone bankrupt 6 times, and he will claim, I didn't go bankrupt.
His company's bankrupt,
and there's a big difference.
As for him as a person, you're never going to get me to defend him.
His companies are bankrupt, and he's in a bigger mess right now with the potential of having the person, because he's personally guaranteed over $400 million of loans coming due in the next couple of years, backed by properties that are going underwater, like Doral and like Mar-a-Lago and places like that, the Trump Tower. He's, those are not insignificant.
Anybody in real estate right now is, but I will say this: we don't have much time. The idea of this New Jersey situation, these guys put this place up right now. Nobody, of course, you're banking on the future of politics, right? So they put all this stuff up in New Jersey. And New Jersey buries these guys in taxes, property and all the other stuff, right, in terms of the casino taxes and all that stuff. So they're paying through the nose, and they're all doing pretty well. All of a sudden, what is it, 5 years later, 10 years later, they open up that place, the Indian Casino in Connecticut, the biggest casino in the world, and now it's closer to New York, and those guys aren't paying any taxes. I have nothing against, indigenous Americans at all. the difference in the tax base for those two places is night and day. And that's when all the places in New Jersey started to go under. Now, I don't like Trump, but I wouldn't have done that to my worst enemy, Brendan. Just saying, there's always a whole story in this stuff. You know what I'm saying?
There are always more facts and more competitions and things like that. But the competition was like
Amazon. They didn't have to pay taxes, and Best Buy did. Right?
If you are comparing the ability of a casino on an Indian reservation, which I think is what I'm not familiar with the casino in Connecticut.
It's huge.
Is that on an Indian reservation?
Yeah. Well, allegedly.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. There was no reservation there. There was no reservation in Michigan City either. There's no Indian reservation in downtown Milwaukee. There's an Indian reservation, Indian casino.
Well, in that case, they'd be subject to the same rules as the other casinos.
They are not. They absolutely are not. They somehow were deeded land back to them. People used to live there. I don't know how that all worked. That would be an interesting story, by the way. If you know somebody who knows about that, that would be fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's different law. You know, it's not like the
you got to remember that Indian reservations, reservation areas are sovereign entities.
Right.
And one reason for that is because Indian lands were taken by the U.S. were confiscated by the U.S. government many years ago, and Indians were moved off their land.
Right.
It was deemed by Supreme Court decisions that the areas where they were moved to became sovereign lands as a sovereign nation inside the United States. And I really don't think you want to get into the argument of what's fair when you're talking about what happens to Native Americans.
All I said you asked if there was a, and if you put one up in Oklahoma on a reservation, I get it. Right, now how you go about doing that in downtown Milwaukee, if you give some land back, I'm not saying it's wrong, I just said the process would be fascinating, I'd like to know more about it, is all I said.
Mm-hmm.
And the one in Michigan, right by where you are, your summer home.
Four Winds, yeah.
Yeah, that's, but there was no, quote, reservation there.
There were a lot of Indian lands across this country that you would not think were Indian lands because of the migration of Americans going west, including places in the Midwest, including places in Florida. The Seminole Nation has lots of land in Florida. And people don't think about that. I mean, people think of Indian reservations as being out in Arizona, New Mexico, and places like that. But they're scattered all around, even around Chicagoland. There are areas that are designated or claimed to be Indian reservations that you wouldn't think about.
Well,
I don't know whether downtown Milwaukee would qualify for that.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, you move the people from Florida to Oklahoma, you would think their lands would be in Florida, not Oklahoma, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would think. What do you say we do a little research on this, Brennan? Because I think it's a pretty fascinating subject. Maybe we'll talk about it either Monday or before. I love arguing with you because you're an attorney. You're like the professor. You're supposed to be right all the time.
Well, I am right all the time.
Yeah.
you just don't admit it.
SP Futures down 3. The SP Futures down 29. And please don't ever give me the box where I'm defending Trump ever again. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Joel and Connie waiting in the wings as soon as I give this stock market report. I'm reading about the Foxwood Indian Casino in Connecticut, man. Pretty fascinating. SP futures down 275, the NASDAQ futures down 39. After a huge update yesterday, Dow futures down 9. Over in Europe, now these guys were up huge yesterday. DAX down 38, that's 0.3%. FTSE down 14.2%. CAC around down 72 cents, I'll say that's flat. Asia, Nikkei up 27.1%. Shanghai up 6.2%. Hang Seng down 200.8%. I'm going to say that these guys have not participated in this last couple day rally. I'm not sure quite why. Just as a way of review, because it's good news, Dow Jones yesterday up 410, 1.5%. S&P 500 up 53, 1.6%. NASDAQ up 203, 1.9%. I don't think we'll do that today, at least not yet, but you never know. Bonds, remarkably, the 10-year rate is going down, even with the market doing this. It's 0.65%. Bund minus 0.53, that's down also. Japan, however, up to positive 0.02. It was right on the deadline yesterday. We have oil. Down 23 cents, but still over 40.37. Really kind of dead in this area. Brent down 19 cents, 42.24. Natural gas down 7 cents, 272. RBOB 124, pretty much unchanged. The gold up 589, 1889. Silver up 30 cents, 23.91. Silver has shown a life. Copper down 2 cents, 296. Maybe what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had a significant crash on the Dan Ryan, a rollover in the right lane on the outbound side just before Pershing Road, exit 55B. I was seeing some pictures of it on Twitter, and it looks like a car flipped off the Ryan and down a hill, which is not good. But crews are on the scene, and it's blocking the right lane currently on the outbound side of the Ryan. Downtown to 95th Street is delayed, but not too bad, about 20 minutes from downtown to 95th as you navigate around the crews that are on the scene there. No issues on the inbound side at this hour. Looks like we did have an overnight fatal crash that happened on Sibley Boulevard down south between Madison and Clyde Avenue. A speeding vehicle on Sibley hit a car coming out of the Citgo gas station. One of the vehicles burst into flames, Chief. One driver was transported to Christ Hospital, but there was a fatal crash that happened earlier this morning down south. Rest of the expressways are all quiet. No issues coming in from any direction. Just that outbound crash on the Ryan. Weather today, it's going to be a nice day, a bit cooler than normal, but we'll see some sunshine and a high of 63. Right now it's clear and 50 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 102 today. Right now it's clear and 78. In sports, the White Sox are playing meaningful baseball for the first time in 12 years, Chief. Beginning this afternoon, they'll play a best-of-three series in Oakland. First pitch is 2 p.m. Central Time today. It'll be Giolito versus Lizardo for the opening matchup. Cubs open their series against the Marlins tomorrow afternoon at Wrigley. That's a 1 p.m. Chicago time first pitch. Monday Night Football, it was the Chiefs remaining undefeated. They took care of the Ravens in Baltimore 34-20. Bears announced what most people fear. Tariq Cohen is out for the year with a torn ACL. You don't expect to tear your ACL on a fair catch and have somebody roll up into you and not get flagged, by the way. But his season is over about a week after he signed the big contract extension. And lastly, the Tampa Bay Lightning are your Stanley Cup champions. They took care of the Dallas Stars in six games last night, 4-2. Chief.
Joel, how are you?
Good morning, Chief. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Just whenever I get pointed in any direction and I see the... I'm going to say the fascist combination of government and big business, and I was reading about this because Brennan got me onto this thing for some reason about these Indian reservations, right? So I'm looking at the one in here in gambling in Connecticut, the Foxwood Resort Casino. This thing's huge, by the way.
It's one of the biggest casinos in the U.S., I believe.
One of the biggest in the world, I think. Yeah. So get a load of this. The tribes pay 25% of their slot machine revenue to the state. In exchange for the state maintaining its prohibition on the machines outside of the two casinos. So they gave these guys a monopoly on slot machines for 25% of the take. So last year, the two casinos had a total slot machine handle. How much would you guys say?
I would have no idea.
$25 million.
$13.2
billion.
And guess how much the winnings are? Now, in Vegas, you see the ones where they say, you know, 90% return, 95% return on the center, you know, whirlwind, whatever the thing is, carousel and so forth. Total winnings are $1.1 billion. So out of $13 billion that people poured into these things, they only won $1.1. How ignorant are the people in Connecticut, for God's sake? What does anybody play these things for? My God. That is special. What do the tracks pay? 85%? And every race, this is unbelievable.
Well, that's why they call them one armed bandits.
Yeah, I guess. All right, Joel, we got the what exactly is the Pac-12 going to do with a starting on November 1st? We got the MAC going to play six games, and are they going to let people in? We've got the market going kind of nuts here. What do you think? What part of the crazy world do you want to talk about?
Well, the Jewish holidays are over.
Did you repent?
yeah. So far, it's Tuesday morning. So far, I'm still in good standing. You failed to mention riots and wildfires.
And floods too, hurricanes.
Yeah. Don't like to talk politics. And I don't like to talk politics, but we have a very interesting next month and a half to go through. And it's a very important time in the history of our country. And I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that regardless of the outcome of the election, that we have a different stance moving forward. How's that?
I would agree with that. Is there any chance of that, or has it become the problem with the people themselves and not the government? In other words, is the government just a reflection of us?
Yes. I hope not. At least a vocal part of our population. But you know, there's been periods of time like this before, and we've gotten through it. So you know, I remain optimistic. The market, you know, seems to remain pretty optimistic, so I expect volatility ahead and you know, during the election. And I think the best thing that this country can hope for is a you know, decisive outcome, and that the election is decided, and whatever, however it's decided, we move in that direction, and we don't go into a prolonged, you know, waiting period over the results, because I think that could be the worst possible thing.
I would agree. I again, boy, this is my day that Maddie's going to be after me for defending Trump. I'll say this: I think we're moving ahead on this mail-in voting a little too quick for me. I know that, or I've heard that in some areas, you know, in the Republican areas, they claim they've closed an awful lot of polling places to make it harder to get to. Which everybody's playing the game. I get that part, but to me, it's, I don't know, Joel. I'm just this old fart, I guess, that walking into some place where you got judges on both sides, they look at you, they look at your signature, and you vote. To me, there's a simplicity there that is pretty hard to duplicate, and I just, you know, I don't know. When you start going off the field on that, I don't know how, whether it gets worse or better.
I mean, but they don't like either. They don't. They're doing that on the polling, and then they're discouraging, mail-in voting too. So that's not an encouraging thing.
But I'd feel a lot better if the vote had to be postmarked by such and such a date, and the ballots went to the precinct and they were counted there. Where they'd say, oh, here's Joel. No, he wasn't here. It's his signature. I think the process should be the same. And it's not going to be.
I agree. I just said that you talk about things that, you know, that you can have control over and you cannot have control over. That would definitely fall in the latter category.
Yeah, I mean, but whenever you have 50 states making their own rules on a federal election, it makes me nervous. I mean, it doesn't mean that I think it's going to roll against Trump or anything. I just wonder what everybody's motivation is. I mean, you know, who knows what it is.
Are you guys excited for the L World Series that won't be played in Chicago?
We just hope that... How the Sox managed to go from being number one seed home team to in Oakland for...
The
seven seed in 1 week is scary.
Well, you...
I will be busy all day today and tomorrow. I'll be watching all eight games and betting intergame on all the games on DraftKings and Penn. And all eight games, I'll be watching all of them.
Do you bet? You bet on the next pitch?
Yeah, I bet on the next. Do you know? I will give you one interesting statistic that a guy gave me once. I went to a baseball game. Do you know that when it goes to a 3-2 count, that the next pitch, 80% is a foul ball?
Because you finally got to put one over.
Really?
You watch it. If you ever, you know, are sitting with a game with somebody and you want to make a few shekels, because I've observed it. The guy told me, and I never really thought about it, but you watch it quite a bit.
So, really?
I don't have a stake in the game. I guess I'll pull for the Chicago teams. I go to places where I have a former residence. And so that I'll go white. I got a White Sox T-shirt, or when they won the World Series, a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah.
And I did get a Cubs one. That's weird because I lived up north. But pulling for you guys, and we'll see. There's be a lot of baseball. They got to make up for all that money they lost.
Well,
right?
Wait till next year for your Tiger.
Oh yeah, there's always next year.
Take care,
all right,
buddy.
Guys, I got a hop. Right. Go Blue.
SP Futures down 4. NASDAQ Futures down 33. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, wrong place, Stocks and Jocks. Now, Tom Ollies, Mr. Kenny Polcari. We have SP Futures down 275. NZB's down 27. It's after a big rally yesterday. I got to ask you, Kenny, are you a guy that goes to the Foxwood Casino and plays the slots?
You know what? I'm not. First of all, I'm not anywhere near Foxwood because I'm not in Florida, but I could go to the Hard Rock down in Hollywood, Florida. But I'm not a slot. I'm not a slots kind of a gambler.
I thought you used to live in Connecticut, though, didn't you?
I grew up in Massachusetts, right outside of Boston, and then I lived in New York. So I bookended Connecticut in both times, right?
I thought at one point you were a train to Connecticut kind of guy at night.
No, I was a train to Westchester County in New York.
Kind of guy. All right, well, you know, what's the difference off the 1%er counties, you know, one thing or the other. So how are you, bud?
What's going on?
Yeah, everything. What do you want to talk about first? For God's sake, we've got.
Well, listen. Yeah. I think really what you have to talk about is not only the market had gotten into a 4 week straight of a downtrend. It got into an oversold position. It broke everyone. If you look at all four indexes, they all breached their 50-day moving averages, and when they did, the algos kicked in. Pushed it lower. The markets, all those indexes tested their intermediate, which is their 100. If you look at each chart individually, they look like mirror images of each other because they did all the exact same thing. They all broke. They tested the 100. They held. They churned a little bit, and then they bounced, right? They bounced on Friday. They bounced again yesterday. Partly, I think, that's much more technical than fundamental because nothing has really changed. I think you could have said anything. You could have said the sun is shining yesterday and the algos would have gone nuts to the upside, which is kind of what they did. And so now they rally right back to the 50-day, which now represents resistance versus support. So I think we're stuck in that trend at least through tonight, when the circus comes to town, right? When the debate happens. And then we see kind of who's the winner, if there is a winner. Certainly 50% of the country is going to think Biden wins. The other 50% is going to think Trump wins. Unless there's a key event tonight that's really going to stand out, I think confusion remains.
Do you think if you held the election today, it would make any difference?
I've been changing my mind a little bit. I told you, if you had asked me a month ago, I would have thought that the Democrats were absolutely going to sweep everything and that Trump was going to get run over. I don't think that anymore. I think that's going to be closer. I don't think either one of them is going to sweep or there's going to be a landslide. I think it's going to be a very close election on election night, which then means it's going to toss it into chaos for probably the next 5 or 6 weeks post that, as they start counting in the mail-in ballots, and then there's challenges to the ballots. And remember, after that recent Supreme Court case, the ballots have to be postmarked by Election Day. They no longer have to be received by Election Day, which means ballots could still be arriving into state coffers, you know, 2, 3, 4 days after the election. And if it's really close on election night, then that may just create more chaos in the weeks that are following. And so I think that's kind of what's going to hold the market in place. Now, if there's a landslide in either direction and the mail-in ballot's not going to make a difference, then I think, you know, you'll know that on November 4th and the night of November 3rd. And then I think, the market will react accordingly. And I already said this to you. I think if the Democrats completely sweep, I think the market takes a hit. Because, you know, there'll be, the story will change completely. And then the outlook for stocks, the outlook for, regulation, the outlook for taxes, the outlook for the economy will certainly change dramatically. I don't think that's a big option. I think potentially what we're going to get is if we get a Biden win, we get a Republican win in the Senate. And so that will cause, checks and balances and gridlock, and the market is okay with gridlock. I think that's the best we can hope for. I don't believe there's going to be a Republican sweep of the whole shebang. So therefore, I think that's, you know, the odds of that are really zero.
I would agree with you. I think the federal election's the president's a lot closer than people think. I do think, though, from our former contributor, Fari, well, he'd still come out if we asked him, I think he was right in that Trump has absolutely decimated the Republican Party. And even in Illinois, we have state Senate seats going Democrat that you would never have dreamed in those districts. Yeah. I mean, I think he could win the president, but I don't think they keep the Senate.
And that's my fear, right? And so if he wins the White House and Congress goes Democratic, there's still some checks and balances, at least. You know, there'd be some fights, you know, there'd be vetoes and overrides and all that stuff. But, I hate to say it. I think you're right. I think there are some Republican seats that are up that you would never think would go Democratic, but I think they could. And, so I think this election, listen, every election's important. I think this one clearly is very important, to a lot of people, really to the country. I continue to think the market's going to remain volatile and thrashing around until there's more clarity. Because look, you and I both know the market can deal with good news or bad news. If it knows it's good news, it can deal with it. If it knows it's bad news, it can deal with it. What it can't deal with is that continued lack of clarity, that uncertainty, that one day it's good, one day it's bad, one day. And so that's why you see this thrashing around the way we see it.
Well, I have a question and a pushback comment, Kenny. I'll do the question first. Guys like you, really good technical stock market guys, will always look at something being oversold, something being overbought, those kinds of things, and the market turned on a dime on a certain day. A guy like me, I don't know how I ever got like this, probably my University of Chicago education, not in stocks, by the way, but in money flows, I think virtually everything that has happened in the last 30 years of our investment lifetime, maybe not before that, actually maybe 40 years, has been absolutely every rally and every, not the general, you know, growth of the economy and so forth, which has caused the market to move up, but every turn, significant turn one way or the other, has been caused foolishly by a Fed that for 40 years has done a horse bleep job. And I'm going to say, when I say horse bleep job, it's because you're supposed to maintain continuity, and they constantly are putting their foot on the gas and on the brake. And you're never supposed to, in my mind, you're never supposed to do that. But like on Friday morning, you just said, okay, we were way too low, it was obvious we should turn, this showed that. And I'm going to say that the two, I won't say idiots, in Washington, Pelosi and Mnuchin, got together, and on Friday morning they said, hey, the market's down, we're going to the rat hole, We better raise the specter of more, another stimulus plan, and oh, by the way, which means another $2 trillion out of this Fed. And as soon as they said that, we went up. Now, I mean, the idea the market is dying for more fake money, and which is they're going to get at some point. They're going to get some.
I do agree with that. I think they've absolutely trained a whole generation of investors and or investment professionals to focus around the latest Fed action, how much money we're going to get, because you see it. The minute the Fed even gives the sense, and I don't ever think they've given it yet, but when the market assumes that when Chair Powell gets up there and he makes a comment, unless he specifically comes out and says, we're doing X and we're raising the bar, we're buying more. If they don't do that, then they stamp their feet and they sell the market off and they scream and yell that the Fed's not doing enough, it's not doing enough. Well, that's baloney. I agree with you. That is baloney. Because when you and I started in this business and, you know, in the 1980s, the late 70s, early 80s, the Fed never did any of that. They opened the door on Thursday mornings at 8:30. They came out. They stood at the podium. They opened up their notebook. They made an announcement. They closed the notebook. They turned around. They walked away. They didn't sit there and hold your hand and say, do you want a Xanax? Come lie down on the couch and let's talk about this and let's make sure everyone's okay. That was baloney. They came out. They made a statement. They walked away, and the market had to deal with it. Today, this generation of investors, because it all started, you know, with the Fed becoming more accommodative and more transparent, and let's act like a therapist and make sure everybody's okay. That's what you get, right?
Well, but you have the one, and you'll have your station, not giving you guys any grief, all day long. We'll talk about fiscal policy, and I will say unequivocally, there's no such thing right now, Kenny. For Mnuchin and Pelosi to come out and say we have a $2 trillion package, the chances of those two creatures being able to borrow $2 trillion from this country's people right now is zero. So if the Fed doesn't print the $2 trillion, they're not going anywhere. So there is no... Am I right or wrong?
Correct. But Nancy, they proposed it. The Democrats have proposed $2.2 trillion, but I haven't seen... I think they're still far apart, right? I mean, Mnuchin and the GOP is at 1.5, so they're still apart. A little bit closer, but I don't think there's a deal yet. There's the talk of that deal, and everyone's getting excited. Look what we're going to do. I agree with you, and so that is partly the reason why the market has once again rallied. But if there's a sense that they're still too far apart and it's not going to happen, watch how quick they sell it right off.
But they're worst case, it's $1.6 trillion. Would somewhere in our lifetime that used to be a lot of money, even to you and me.
Yeah.
I mean. So you're
just a couple of zeros, a couple of extra zeros.
So okay, suppose it's 1.7. It's going to go right in the market. It's not coming to you or me that I feel. Right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I can't divorce the two. It's like
no, you're right. No, you can't. You're right. I'm on your side on that.
Actually, Kenny, real quick, because we got to go. When I was at the University of Chicago early on, and we still have people fighting about stock splits, right, and whether stock splits are good for the market or good for the stock. And it's funny, when they did this before I got there, so in the early 70s, they did a big study on whether stock splits were good for companies and for stock prices. And they came back with we can't even give you an answer. And you know why? It was because they could never isolate the announcement. It was always, we're going to have a stock split. Oh, by the way, the earnings are up. Oh, by the way, we're increasing the dividend. So now,
that's when they would announce it, right? They'd announce it around earnings, so they could give all that news at the same time. And if they were announcing a stock split and increasing the dividend, and they had good earnings, that was a win-win-win for everybody. Right.
So right now, when you talk about these announcements, they're the same way. They're always like four tongued in the same announcement. You can't figure out which is the real message.
Right.
Anyway, bud, you take care of yourself, and we'll talk at you next week. SP Futures now down 6.
Talk to you next week.
NASDAQ futures down 52. Be right back. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Tyson Jackson. I'm Tom Holly. Just Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures now down 7. We're leaking a little. I didn't think we would be. I thought we were going to head right up here today into the debates, but we still could. But we're right now we're heading the wrong way. And SP Futures down 44. Still not a blip on how high we were up yesterday, but again, I'm a little surprised. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph from Luckbox Magazine. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
We're doing good. We're trying to pick the most cogent topics. And I landed on this deal. I keep staring at this thing. We started talking about an Indian casino somehow with Trump. And I can't believe that the state of Connecticut, in return for 25% of the gross of all the slot machines at these two Indian casinos, the deal is they'll ban slot machines for the rest of the state. That is spectacular.
It's a hell of a deal.
That's what's wrong with me in life. I could never even imagine something that stupid. And yet, I should be able to be, I'd say, no, nobody would ever go with that dumb of a deal. And I wouldn't even propose it. That's where I've been. I need guys with more imagination, you know, type of thing around me. Just saying.
You need to be around more politicians.
Or more magazine guys, you know. So I understand that you and Mike get your hair done at the same guy, and the total is only 71 grand.
Can you imagine? Actually, it's funny. I got my very first professional haircut in probably 7 months just yesterday. You know, long overdue from this from the home coronavirus version, you know, just whacking at the sides.
Yeah.
So that was quite a process. Feel sorry for those guys, though. You know, they've taken a beating. It's so hard not to think of a... When you're thinking of things that way, it's so hard to find a business that hasn't taken such a beating. You know, walking by a dry cleaner, I stopped in to talk to the dry cleaner, who I literally have not dropped off any clothing to for, you know, seven months as well. And I asked them if they're getting any traffic, and they said, no, just nothing, nobody.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, are you going to make it? And said, well, I have no choice, but, you know.
I bet he's not paying his rent, and he's going to...
Every little business is touched somehow, right?
Well, Mike Barber, the guy, they closed over in the CBOE building. I had to go find him on Westchester on a Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, it's crazy stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, and that whole group, I mean, maybe they got a little bit of a trickle-down on something, the PPP, but that, you know, if you're paying rent, that doesn't last. I mean, plus, we're way past that. That was June. We're now almost October.
Yes.
But
in Chicago, you saw beginning, October 1st, that the capacity of indoor bars and restaurants can go up from 25% to 40%, but still with a 50-person cap. So that doesn't do much for anybody.
One of the places I go to, and it, it makes a dramatic difference in how your place is sort of set up. Mm-hmm. Now the Tripoli, where Maddie and I have been going in the neighborhood, they have a nice long bar, so if you go and you can sit next to the person you go with, I'm going to say they could probably, within the Lori rules, don't say the dumb Lori rules, they can actually, if you go as couples, say if you and I walk in together, we can sit together, even though we're not a couple. I'm going to say you can probably get up to, if you distance the other people 6 feet, you probably can get close to, what, 70% at the bar, Manny? I'm going to say.
Yeah, that sounds close.
And the tables are lengthwise in the place because the bar is pretty long. So you probably can go every other table. Now, Club Lago, where I go, nice people.
Great spot.
Well, I haven't been there in eight, and they've had nobody inside. To this day, they've had nobody inside. Because no matter how they did it, they were better off trying to put a couple of tables in front of the bar because their bar is short enough to where it's like, you know, three or four sets of couples. And the tables, if you're 6 feet apart, they're down to like, I think they said four tables. And the cleaning regimen is way too heavy for 15 people, you know, where you got to clean the whole place pretty much every hour. And he said it's just not worth it. I mean, and they don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they probably got it. But, I mean, what it strikes me is we have people in office, and I'm not going to say anything bad about their mentality, whether they like people, don't like people, but they clearly don't know how businesses are run. There's no way a restaurant pays, and you know it's better than me because you've been involved in them. You don't pay full rent at 25% capacity. I mean, what are you doing?
No.
And plus the prices, I was talking to another place, I won't mention the name because it's one of my favorite spots. You know, he was there the other night and he goes, I love those guys, but I know chickens, you know, it's, what is it, $1.50 a pound, and I just had chicken Vesuvio and it was $27. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, it's, what is it, eight times the cost of what they are to make it. You know, I mean, it's, we're reaching a point where, I mean, I don't, you have a glass of wine, $9, and I look at the wine, I'm not a sommelier, but I know I see that wine at Binny's for 12. You start getting five glasses out of it at $9.50, that's a little rich. You know, but I don't blame them. I'm just saying, it's over the top.
Well, it's a tough business to be in right now. You know, the basic rule of thumb for a restaurant is typically you need to do 1.5 times your covers Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night to pay the rent. So, you know, if you seat 100, you need to seat 150 those three nights.
Yep.
And that's not remotely possible under this regime. So, it's impossible, right?
Jeff, I'll ask you because you know I was talking to John Flanagan a week ago Monday because he's a property attorney and taught, you know, title law and all that kind of things forever. He actually taught title law. And he was walking me through how the taxes all work and the timing and all that stuff. But where do you see? I mean, right now, my big concern, and I've been, is that we're reaching the cutoff point for all the people that got some help for a few months, had some savings, maybe got a break from their lender, maybe not. Maybe we're able to borrow. Well, now, all I heard all weekend on News Radio 78 is virtually every bank is shut off or made it exceptionally difficult right now because no federal money's coming to lend to small businesses right now. I think we're going to get, unless something dramatically changes, either in open it up, which I don't even know helps right away because I don't think people go back right away. I think we could see 10 times as many people go out of business in October, November than we saw in March and April. I mean, I really hope I'm wrong, but we're at the end of the rubber band, I think, in just about everywhere. But what is the timing and what's the process on all this? I mean, I've heard anecdotal rumors of how many people that restaurants and cleaners and so forth are just not paying their rent.
Right.
Now, I mean, are the people in the buildings, are they going to send Jay a half check for taxes and then fight it out later? I mean, where do you think this, I mean, everyone's sort of different, but there's so many people in kind of the same boat. How do you think it works out? I have no idea. who ends up taking the hit on this? I mean, do they honestly think that a building like, you know, 425, you know, whatever, LaSalle, I'm going to say the tax bill on the place is $5 million. Did they actually expect that check to show up? The state? Or the city?
Yeah. The chain has been, you know, at some point there's somebody at the bottom of the chain here who's going to have to take the heat. But it's, you know, so you've had the retail, the brick and mortar stores that just haven't been paying. And then in a larger building that has commercial tenants, they have been paying. I was talking to the guy who is the Crane's real estate editor, and he was saying that for the most part, that you know the strip mall, they're screwed, of course, but the commercial building that has, you know, at least 95% or 90% commercial tenants, they're not doing bad because commercial businesses are paying. They're working from home is working. You know, they're paying a little bit less in expenses, so they're still able to pay their rent, and you know, their businesses are still surviving. But if they have a retail or restaurant, you know, obviously they're not paying rent, so they've been able to get by. And then the residential buildings or mixed use buildings, they've been mixed too, because the default rates on residential has been worse than in a commercial building, apparently, you know, as a rule in Chicago.
Yeah.
But everyone's taking some exposure. So the worst exposure, of course, is retail, then residential, then commercial. So the larger commercial buildings in the city aren't doing terribly. But the higher their mix of residential and the higher their mix of retail determines, you know, how badly they're doing. And the defaults are coming out of retail and a smaller percentage out of residential.
Well, you can see if you're big enough. I mean, I had the, nobody cares about my cell phone, neither do I really. But I basically, mine conked out, right? And then all of a sudden it came back on after 3 days, which is another mystery. So I was telling Maddie this the other day. I went to the
TikTok.
I went to the T-Mobile in our neighborhood, right? So of course I walked by the three garbage trucks idling outside, stinking up the area in case there's a riot. I walk in, I look around, Jeff. There's not a phone in the place. They've all been taken because they don't want the place, you know, tagged by looters. Okay, so you couldn't buy a phone there. The guy goes, man, maybe you should go over to Best Buy. So I go over there and I walk through a boarded through door. There's maybe five employees. There's nobody in the place. And I said, you know, can I buy a phone? Ah, we don't. We want to. If you want to do a plan, we've got here these Apple. No, I don't want an Apple. I don't want a plan. Can I just buy a phone? Ah, we don't like cell phones. Okay. And they'd know. I said, well, what about maybe fixing mine? Well, yeah, maybe I talk to the Geek Squad. I look over there. There's nobody there. And then so Saturday morning, I go to this place on the internet, and they're a used phone. They fix phones. They fix laptops. They sell refurbished. Blah blah blah. I get up there, first guy in the door. Of course, I pay my $2 to park. And I said, you know, he goes, well, it looks like it's working now. The guy touches it, it comes back out. So I guess he's good at fixing stuff. Anyway, so I go, well, I'm not going to trust that one. How about if I just show me what you got? Why don't I just buy a phone? There's nobody else in here. I'll be out here in 10 minutes. Well, I don't have any phones. What do you mean? Your website says you got nothing but phones. Ah, we don't have any phones anymore. Since the COVID and the looting, we don't keep anything here. I'm thinking, what is going on? Jeff, I mean, no, the phone stores don't have phones. They can't just sell you something. They can't send it to other places. Is anybody doing anything? I mean,
dispensaries are doing pretty well.
Oh yeah,
they've got product if you need anything.
How much walking have you been doing, like down in the loop and driving around lately?
Much less. You know, my daily step meter is down a good 60%.
So. You can't go 15 feet. The entire city's high.
Yeah,
it's all you smell. You get in the car. If you're in Hubbard's Cave, if your window's open, all you smell is dope. You get high in Hubbard's Cave every night.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire city is now just high, and nobody works.
It's true. You know, in the early days of Denver, passing over, I was doing business out in Denver and going frequently, and practically overnight, I recognized the change, you know, of it smelling like weed everywhere, and then, you know, God forbid you ordered something in a restaurant that required a waiter to bring it to your table, because that took some extra time, but you got a big smile at the end because They were stoned as well. I remembered specifically saying, being an advocate of it, you know, just being in favor of the legalization of all drugs, but that's my extreme position, but saying, boy, is this really such a good idea, because I recall, you know, what appeared to be more loitering in the streets, the smell of weed everywhere, and just a less than effective kind of service attitude that seemed to pervade. And I'm sure that's our next stop, and that's what we'll witness here.
Jeff, what you mentioned, actually Kenny's one I mentioned earlier, so but I didn't have a chance to quiz him. And one of the big things you hear commercials now on the taxes, and I don't want to go back to history, although I'm going to. Everybody remembers Ronald Reagan, Dutch, you know, the finest president that ever walked, which is such BS. I can't even go there, but. And all I remember is his tax cut and how it revolutionized the world and this and the other thing. How many of those people remember that within, was it 12 months or 14 months, they were horrified of the tax receipts going down and put through the biggest tax increase in the history of the country a year after? The tax was a Tax Reform Act of 1982.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say, what percentage of the population remembers that? It's probably 1%. And what the weird part was, Jeff, is they reduced taxes on all the big guys. Then when they came back, they raised all the payroll taxes on the little guys and some of the other. But I listened to these people talk about how, well, if Biden gets in, and, again, I'm in the middle. I'm not going to vote for either one of them. Biden gets in, we're going to raise taxes, and Trump won't. Jeff, all it takes is a third grader to look at the federal deficit. They've spent 3 years' income taxes already this year. Anybody who thinks that who's ever, the minute this COVID settles down, if it ever does, that there's not going to be a pretty serious tax increase at all levels, even to people that don't have the money, is out of their friggin' mind. I mean, there's no way it ain't happening. I don't care if Trump, Scalia, Reagan are all sitting in that office, there's no dough there. I don't see how there's not a tax increase no matter who's there. Can you?
No, a tax increase is inevitable, but it can certainly be skewed towards corporations. And again, I don't think you'd see it in the form of a payroll tax increase. I just think at this point the easiest thing to do politically would be to raise corporate taxes again, but excluding independent contractors and not raising a payroll tax increase. I think that would be an inevitable conclusion. Get more bang for your buck. You can't be paying stimuluses, checks, another round of stimulus, which you'd expect to occur regardless of the election outcome in November. You can't be writing stimulus checks and at the same time enacting a payroll tax increase. I think a payroll tax increase is off the table. Under Republican, I absolutely believe that to be true, but I think a corporate tax increase
define
that would
payroll
reverse
tax.
The effects of the last tax decrease, which that corporate tax rate increase would be the first thing to occur. Now that still, if it could be done in a manner, because fact or not, I mean it's funny that I still hear, well, you don't hear it too much, but the H&R Block and all the independent studies of income taxpayers, individual income taxpayers, show that the average family in the U.S. saw its tax go down $1,200, and that is excluding the upper bracket. So there was, and anybody who ever got a check realizes that there was a tax decrease. So the idea that it was for the wealthy was ridiculous. It was for everybody, but because the wealthy pay more taxes, they got a larger decrease. So yes, whenever there's a tax decrease, you could always say, lying, that it's for the wealthy, because of course they receive the benefit of it. But I would assure you that this time around that the corporations would be get the brunt of a tax increase going forward, and that payroll tax would be off.
I'm going to push back a little bit and ruffle you, because you're 1%ering me here, in the listeners. Without knowing you're doing that, and you're gonna be mad at me for saying that, but that's all right. I can handle it. When you when you talk about giving a family, I think when people, especially people that have been around a while and allegedly are doing well, when they talk about taxes, they talk about income taxes. And yet, the lion's share of the population doesn't do that because of the four legs of the stool: income tax, payroll taxes, state and local, or state and then local, correct? So yeah. When you, I think my brother Dan did this for me once, he's our tax guy, that a family of four in a home probably is pushing $45,000 before they pay any income tax, right? So if you lower the guy making 50 or 60s, 1,000, you're doing something. But if you kick, say, Medicaid back to the state and his property taxes go up 1,000, you haven't done him any good.
Oh, of course.
You know, so it's like silly putty, and you know,
sure.
Young kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're squeezing here and it comes out someplace else. I mean, I think what will end up happening, and I hope it doesn't, is you're going to find an increase in Medicare tax. You know, you're going to find it a slight increase in Social Security tax, or we'll raise the number on the limit on how much, you know, you can pay. I mean, instead of $80,000 or whatever it is, it'll be 200. I think you're going to see a huge increase in the gas tax to pay for, quote, the infrastructure. And I'll bet there's going to be some sneaky tax, whether it's 500 hours a year on a federal level for people with electric cars or something along those lines because they don't buy gas. And you're going to find a whole list of crap that they're going to drop on people.
Yeah, I think that's 100% accurate, that there's no way that the economy can continue without a tax increase. I mean, considering the absolute, you know, devastation it's had over the last 9 months, I mean, that'll be a given, or by the time, you know, by the time this reconciles. But I think at the same time, you can still have different expectations of the severity of a tax increase based on which party prevails at the polls.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The only argument we're having, Jeff, is I think in the end, it might be who gets it. In other words, if the Republicans won't raise the taxes as much, but they'll shove more onto the states, which gets right back to you. You know, I'm saying that the numbers don't lie. They're going to have to recoup, if they come up with another $1.5 trillion, they're going to have to recoup $6 trillion from this year somehow over the next 10 years or 20 years or whatever. Yeah. And no matter, the numbers aren't different for Trump than they would be for Biden.
Right.
Right? I mean, I
yeah, see. Except, you know, the constituencies are a little bit. So, for example, the Democrats would be somewhat forced to repeal the tax increase that Trump put on wealthy families in Illinois, California, and New York. And you know, we know that to be a fact. That was an increase because your inability to deduct, your property, deduct your property tax was
right
in those states was a big hit to upper incomes. It was just a big hit, and they as a tribute back to New York and California, which will, you know, California alone will ultimately get Biden elected. You know, they're going to have to raise those rates back.
Well, but I mean, everything we've lost over the last, I mean, Maddie, it used to be, I'll go historical on Maddie here, the one, you know what's interesting? I did this, why I did this, because I was, one of the listeners challenged me 5 years ago about tax rates. You can actually go online and you can find the original, what do you want to call it, the tax return that was mailed to people when you had to fill out your forms, the 1040 forms. And some of them are fascinating. You go back far enough, man, they used to have a table where if you made, you know, $25,000 a year, the table would tell you, if you don't itemize, how much you could take off in sales tax. So if Illinois is 10% and you made $35,000, they'd say, okay, you can take off, you know, $300 for sales tax, because that would be like the average you paid. But you could always have taken any big item and added it to that. So, say for instance, I was just hearing, somebody's telling me that the new Jeep Cherokee, how a Jeep is $100,000. Jeff, I don't know if you knew that or not. So, I mean, there's a lot of cars that are $100,000 now. I mean, whatever. I don't think all the cars I've ever bought combined come up to 100 grand, but that's just me. But say you went in and did that. What's the tax? Actually, the tax on a car is not 11%. It's only 6.5%, right? Because a city cannot and county cannot tax something that's titled. But that's, so what are you paying? You're paying $6,500 in taxes. It used to be where you could identify that and take it off of your income. But now if you're paying $6,500 for the car, then you're paying the title, all the other crap, and this is after tax, and your property taxes are after tax. I mean, good Lord, Jeff. I mean, you're starting to pay one on top of the other, aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, California, if you, you know, I mean, Matty hates it when I do this, but if you're like, I don't even know where Phil Mickelson lives, but say he lives in California, if the guy has a big spread, their sales tax is high. At the end of the year, if the guy wins a tournament in California, what's the guy's marginal rate on that last check of his? It's got to be to the moon, isn't it?
Yeah, the states are really going to be in a bad way. Obviously, you saw like New Jersey had another tax increase, and there's been immediate flight out of New Jersey. I mean, we're kind of headed in this direction where everyone's going to end up living in Texas and Florida. I mean, that all the income's going down there. The tax flight that's been documented in this year alone has been extraordinary. So cities, and then of course people are leaving New York and California for other reasons right now. You know, like, the budgets. New York is, and it's true, it's sad. Listen, I know these things always sound political, but the people that I've talked to over the last 3 months leaving New York are not political. It's everything from young families to old families in the Upper West Side and Upper East Side to, you know, single people living down in Lower East Side and Chelsea and Soho. I mean, everyone is, well, everyone's a strong word. Many people are leaving. I've talked to well over a dozen people in 3 months that have actually already moved from the city, moved out from the city. I can't imagine. I haven't been to New York. I go frequently, at least every 3-4 weeks on business. I haven't been there in, you know, this year, of course, and or since January. And I just can't imagine what that city looks like.
Jeff, let's go to break, and let's talk about that, because to me, again, it's not, I hate to keep reducing things to numbers, but the numbers are there. I mean, and if the numbers don't match, people go. S&P futures down 3, NASDAQ futures down 30. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Matt Weber. I'm Jeff Joseph with us from Luckbach Magazine. SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ down 34. We've been right about here. Down 2 to down 6, back to down 4, so we're leaking a tad, but no, given no hint of giving back a whole chunk of the gains that we had yesterday, because we had a lot of gains yesterday. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 57.4%, but they were up 3% yesterday. FTSE down 34.6%, CAC around down 10.2%. Over in Asia, these guys have not really participated up or down. They've been much more steady. Nikkei up 27.1%, Shanghai up 6.2%, Hang Seng down 200.8%. U.S. yesterday, again, Dow Jones is up 400 yesterday, S&P up 53, NASDAQ up 203, so we're, like I said, way on top of that. Bonds cannot move anywhere except they're going probably the wrong way if you're looking for a good economy. Your 10-year yield's down to 0.65, one minus 0.53, only the Japan up positive 0.02. Oil down 26 cents, 40.34, Brent down 21, 42.21. Natural gas down 6 cents to 273. Our Bob is unchanged at 124. Last but not least, gold up 779. Silver with a pretty good rally, up 37 cents. Silver's really been hit lately. I could use a big rally in silver. I could use silver up like 4 hours today, but that's not going to happen. Manny, what do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Express-wise, they're looking really good, Chief. That earlier rollover crash on the outbound Ryan is all clear. No resulting congestion from that. Inbound side is looking good. No issues on the Ford. I-57 or the Stevenson. Just a bit of a slowdown on the Stevenson around Cicero, but no accidents or delays. Eisenhower moving a bit slow on the inbound side, but same, no accidents or delays. Edens and Kennedy have been quiet all morning. Off the expressways, we had a fatal crash that happened down south this morning. Sibley Boulevard between Madison and Clyde is closed for the investigation. Apparently a speeding vehicle on Sibley hit a car coming out of the Citgo gas station, and vehicles burst into flames, and not good in that situation, and that still has Sibley closed down there. And then a couple of issues out west. Looks like Lake Street at Lombard Road, there is a crash, and then just north east of there, Route 83 at Bryn Mawr, there is an accident. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, a pleasant day, a bit cooler than normal, but we'll have some sunshine and a high of 63. Right now it's clear and 51 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 102 today. Right now it's clear and 79. In sports, the White Sox are playing playoff baseball for the first time in 12 years this afternoon. 2 p.m. in Oakland, they'll take on the A's. It'll be Lucas Giolito making the start for the Sox against Luzardo from the A's. It's a best-of-three series with all three games being played in Oakland. I believe the first two, the A's will be the home team, and then I believe if there's a game three, the White Sox get to bat last, even though they're playing in Oakland. I'm yet to confirm that, but I believe that's how that'll play out. Same for the Cubs. They're in action tomorrow for game one of their series against the Marlins. All three games will be at Wrigley Field, and they play at 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon for game one. Monday Night Football last night, it was a battle of Patrick Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson, and Mahomes got the best of Jackson last night. He was dominant, and the Chiefs had no issue beating the Ravens in Baltimore 34-20, and the score wasn't even that close. Tariq Cohen is out for the year, Chief. The Bears running back slash punt returner tore his ACL on Sunday.
about a week after signing a big contract extension. So tough luck for him. He's out for the year. And lastly, the Tampa Bay Lightning won their second Stanley Cup championship, first since 2004. They took care of Dallas 4-2.
Chief. He didn't tear it. The loud who fell into him tore it for him.
Yeah, that was, I mean, talk about a guy that hadn't missed a game in his career. Just very healthy, and he catches a fair catch on a punt, catches the ball, is standing there, and all of a sudden a defensive player or a, you know, a kick coverage guy flies into his planted knee and blows out his ACL, and they flagged it originally, and then they said that the defender was pushed into him, but they never really showed you a replay after that, so you couldn't really tell if he was actually pushed into him or not, and maybe he was, but man, that's about as bad luck as you can get. You don't expect to get hurt on a fair catch.
Well, I saw some pretty nasty. Did you see the tripping call last night?
I did.
What was that all about?
Yeah, the guy was laying on his stomach, and they said he kicked his legs out for a trip, and I didn't see it. That was a big play, too.
Well, call back a touchdown.
And it was early in the game.
Yeah. Anyway, Jeff, you were mentioning before people are moving. I think it's, you know, and this is what is in, if I could possibly, I can't do it, but neither can you, because you could do it, too. Maybe easier than me because you got a better personality. Somehow we got to sit our politicians down, especially ones that have never had a job outside of a law firm or business like Lori or just a rich kid like Jay. You have to explain to
or
people.
Or a rich kid like Trump.
Yeah, or a rich kid like Trump. You have to explain to people. Trump has I think, much more of a knowledge of how like the painter's business works than Jay or Lori. Because he doesn't pay him. But anyway, like Richard J. Daley, you know, he knew what the garbage men did. He knew what the restaurant guy did and what their economics were. Some of these other people, I don't know where they come from, but what you just mentioned before the break, Jeff, people are moving out of New York. I think what people don't sort of get is there's always this economic trade-off. And when the people moved up here, this is mostly African-American, but all people have come to the big cities over time, the great American migration from the South, right? Well, there were jobs in Chicago at the stackyards, the steel mills, you name it. So you could make, I'm going to say, $8 an hour versus 50 cents an hour as a sharecropper. And all you had to do was be willing to work hard, right? Well, of course, your apartment here is going to be more than in Mississippi. Duh, right? I mean, if somebody gets a raise from Chicago, he's working for, you know, Merrill Lynch or someplace, and all of a sudden they like you, you're making $100,000, and they say, well, you're moving to New York, but because it's New York, and now you're going to be a big shot, a big promotion, you're going to make $200,000 or $180,000. And all of a sudden your apartment goes from $1,200 to $2,500, but you're in Manhattan, you don't need a car, and guess what, you know, you'll roll with it, even though you don't have a balcony, you know, that type of thing, because you're never there anyway. All you're doing is working. You have no place to go, you don't care. All of a sudden now, you're not working, and you're in this funky one-bedroom, and you're paying $2,500 a month, and they don't care if you're back home in Mississippi or wherever the hell you came from, or Winnetka or Evergreen Park, and you say, what am I doing here? It's yep. Some horrible place. I can't even go out the door. The bars and restaurants are closed. How the hell am I going to eat? What am I doing? If you don't make the reason why rents are high in a place is because people are making money. Don't our leaders get that? I mean, when you see people leaving the South Side, leaving the West Side, these neighborhoods are empty. Is it because, duh, Pullman's not here, U.S. Steel's not here, Western Electric's not here, you know, places that had 20,000 people making $20 an hour 30 years ago, they're gone. Well, if they're gone, the people are gone. I mean, why is it so hard to understand? Or is it? Or they do understand it, they can't do anything about it. You talk for a while.
Well, let's first quantify what we're dealing with. So I got a quiz for both you and Maddie. Top 10 outbound states for this year through August. What would be the top five?
I'm going to say Connecticut, Illinois, New Jersey, New York. Maybe California, but I don't know. California
well,
sometimes.
Let's see. New Jersey first, New York second, Illinois third, Connecticut fourth, and the fifth one I wouldn't have guessed. Fifth is Kansas. So these are net outbounds.
Yeah.
More people moving out than moving in on a, you know, material basis. It's 2-1 in New Jersey and in New York. And then, of course, Illinois is third. So next question is, where are they going? So what are the top 10 inbound states for this year through August 16th?
Texas, Florida, Arizona. I'm going to say...
Arizona's number five. Maddie, how about you?
Texas, Florida.
I'm surprised Texas, Florida are not in the top 10. They are for New York and New Jersey. New York and New Jersey residents are going to Texas, Florida. But overall, the top 10 or the top 5 is Vermont's number 1.
Wow.
With
well, that's what Frank told us earlier this week, Chief, that all of New York is going to Vermont.
Yep, Vermont, number 1, then Idaho, then Oregon, then South Carolina, then Arizona.
I would guess
by
that, yeah.
Tennessee, North Carolina, Alabama, South Dakota, and Arkansas. I think what we just saw is a reason why electoral college reform is not going to go anywhere based on those 10 states.
Well, you know what you just mentioned, though, Jeff? Again, the devil is in the detail. When I worked for my first job out of school was at Allied Van Lines, of all places. I was a consultant. An insultant. A consultant, wherever
a
I was.
A consultant?
Insultant, yeah.
Is that, like, what size boxes you need? Or
no, well, I wouldn't have been very good at that. But it was back when you needed, you couldn't just take somebody's household goods from Illinois and take it to Wisconsin. You had a paper, remember, back in those days? So yeah. What Allied did was brought all these independent agencies together under a big network. But you needed a network in every place. So if somebody's moving from Chicago to Tucson, you had to make sure you had a guy down there in Tucson that was alive and well, because when the truck got down there, you wanted that guy to provide unpackers or packers or whatever it is, decent people, so the whole system worked. Well, if those guys were going under, they sent me down there to help the guy out.
In terms of logistics. You've been replaced by a computer since.
Well,
but
not logistics so much, but just finances and things like that. That was always my big driving thing. I wanted to be small business. And, I tell you what, I learned a real lot. But having said that, even in those days, Illinois and the northern states were always, in the middle of the summer, all your trucks, your trailers, household trailers were stuck in Arizona, Florida, those places. But in those days, it was always retired people. Now, I think you're not talking about retired people. You're talking about regular people. So there's a huge difference. Because if you went back and just looked at the list of people going from Illinois to those places, there's always been that kind of an outbound thing. But now it's for a totally different reason, I think. Would you agree?
Well, yeah. No, it's definitely for completely different reasons now. There's quality of life and urban blight and taxes are the primary things that are driving relocation now.
But why do the Powells always seem to think that people still have this money left? There's a section of population, not them. If you're poor, it's rich. If you're rich, you say we need to broaden the tax base, meaning tax the poor more or middle class. I mean, everybody's got money but you. Hey, I got a question for you. this is interesting. I made a comment yesterday, see if you agree or not, that in my opinion, all levels of government, federal, state, and city, could use a constitutional convention right now or soon. And one of our listeners, our good listeners, said, ask Chief why he thinks that, because in the current environment, how could you even do something like that and not make things worse?
A constitutional convention for what purpose? Do what?
I think they're all stale. I think they're all old. Uh-huh. And the way we did it here in Chicago, I don't know if you were here at the time. I don't know where you were when you were in high school. We had a constitutional convention here, and somehow the rules were that nobody in power could go. It had to be totally new people. And that's where the Richie Dalys, the Mike Madigans, and all those guys got their start. Uh-huh. They all ran it. Well, I'm saying good and bad. There was a lot of good people, too. A lot of people in their 20s and 30s that had regular jobs all of a sudden put their name in people's lawns, and they ran. And if you were a state senator, you couldn't go. So there was at least some huge attempt to make this something fresh and new. Because I think the constitutions at all levels, I think they're just old. I mean, I'm not saying there's anything that we want to throw out the U.S. Constitution in the sense that it's one of the best pieces of paper ever put together. But, I mean, I think it totally misses the boat and corporations lasting forever. It totally misses the boat and people influencing elections outside of their district, which I think was not possible. There's no way in Vermont, or was Vermont even one of the original states, could mess with a state election in South Carolina for representative in 1790, I don't think. But now it happens all, I mean, is that correct? You know, what is the powers in Congress that have been taken over, should they be listed a different way? I mean, clearly in the city of Chicago, you don't need 50 wards, do you? I don't think.
No, you're throwing a lot out here at this point. There's the, you know, is it, for example, when I was speaking with the Libertarian candidate for president a couple weeks ago, Jo Jorgensen, I asked her the question, would you favor a unilateral across-the-board decrease on federal budgets at 50%, regardless of everything, defense, spending, every possible type of spending? And she said, absolutely, unequivocally, and absolutely, with no particular preference to any one of them. And her notion wasn't about making a judgment call as to, well, we should be spending more on health care or the environment versus military or our schools. It was nothing like that. It was just that every area of government, particularly the military and the Pentagon, is bloated beyond efficiency, and that it could use a 50%, you know, cutback and still operate and deliver the level of services that a government should be able to deliver. So that was from a tax side of the equation. But you're also speaking to reform on every possible different issue.
I'm not saying reform. You change everything.
Not a tax based reform.
I'm just saying let's look at it. But when you mentioned, I'm surprised she said that actually. Because I'm going to say, I don't know if Maddie can check this real easy. I'm going to say that the money that comes to the federal government, 70% of it, within plus or minus 5%, is earmarked for checks to the people. Either Social Security. I'm going to say over 50% of the defense budget is pensions. And if you think you're going to, on one given day, reduce everybody's pension by half, I don't know what vote you get there, Jeff. I mean, everybody envisions the things they think are bloated, and they want to cut that. And I don't disagree with that at all. Mm-hmm. But the point is, when you talk these, like, one of the things we learned in grad school was the worst thing, like Chainsaw Al or one of those guys would come into a company and say, okay, we're cutting 20% across the board. When you don't even know any of your people, it's your second day in the place. All you've done is absolutely screw the good managers and reward the crummy ones. Because the guy who has his place run on efficiency, he can't work with 20% less people. It's somebody who's an idiot and has got 40% more than he needs. It's not even a problem for him, right?
Yes and no. I mean, my own experience, and I've had some experience in that area, is that Then you get back to where we are now, where you're picking winners and losers based on either a political bias or some other reason, you know.
Well, I mean,
it's hard to say. The problem is that our leaders lack the discipline to make any of those decisions. Either they're picking winners and losers based on their constituencies or their political biases, or they're not making, you know, that kind of across the board assessment that, look, I know that knowing, you know, walking through the post office or walking through this government agency, I know that if there were 20% less people sitting at their desks, that nothing material would change.
I don't disagree. You know. Well, my point is that when you look at the numbers as a whole, which I'm sure you do, it's not like I'm telling you don't. But if you, matter of fact, I went through this once. It was a Bush election. One of the guys was talking about government efficiency and so forth. So I read this article, I probably don't still have it, but it just outlined all the stuff that the federal government spends money on. It said if somebody went to Washington and all they did for 4 years was just ride herd and go from meeting to meeting and building to building and department to department and made themselves out to be the most total ass that was ever in government, not that the people don't deserve it, and went through every place out there and got rid of 20% of the people, that it would be less than 1% difference to the budget. Just the way the numbers work out. Now, I'm with you. It should happen.
Yeah.
But somebody's going to say, well, God, all that work for what? All those enemies? For what?
Yeah, well, it's not just it's not about payroll. It's about spending. You know, what about, you know, how much is spent on this aircraft carrier and how much is spent on, you know, on Pentagon spending or just other types of spending or programs. Well, listen, I think that's there are some people like myself who just feel that government spends way too much money across the board. Would not, and that what it should be doing is delivering a more effective safety net. You know, I think that's the problem with that type of libertarian argument, is that people assume malice, you know, by those statements of a libertarian principle that government's too big. They immediately assume malice. What is that called? That's a mental model called Hanlon's razor. You know, you know, like Occam's razor. This is called Hanlon's razor, and that is that you should never attribute malice when the answer could have been just pure stupidity or being uneducated. And, you know, people, it's a problem with people today, is that they don't follow Hanlon's razor, and that, you know, they immediately assume that someone is, you know, hates black people if they have a different view of Black Lives Matter, or hates women if they think the Me Too movement is excessive. And if they simply applied Hanlon's razor, they would not immediately jump to the malice point, and maybe there's another underlying reason why that, you know, people have a view. So Hanlon razor, you know, applies there as well with libertarians. Just because they want to decrease the size of government doesn't mean they want to take away money from the poor and the needy. And I think a good example of that was asking directly Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian candidate for president, you clearly, you know, what do you favor as a solution to health care? And then she spoke, as all politicians would, about what they think's wrong with health care today. And I said, well, wouldn't the free markets, which is the solution that you truly propose, a truly free market, and of course, she gave the example of HIP, the Healthy Indiana Program, as being one of the best programs in the country, because it provides a safety net, it provides cash to people that they could spend on a free market basis, and that has driven healthcare costs down. So in other words, so she came out clearly saying, well, of course I advocate a safety net. You have to have one. And that is the solution, is that, you know, you, instead of picking and choosing winners and losers and the government paying for pharmaceuticals, that they give the people the money themselves, and then that creates a free market whereby delivers of healthcare goods and services and pharmacy and pharmaceuticals are competing to get those dollars spent in their direction. So the notion that those people who want to, you know, to rip apart spending on a macro level and, you know, decrease government budgets across the board equally, that somehow that's about taking money away from poor people, just isn't the case. You know, that's,
well, I don't think
that's attributing malice without, when there might be another, when there might be another reason for it.
So, you know, if you just would have watched the movie, The Absence of Malice, you would have known all that. the late Wilford Brimley, one of his best roles ever. What did he say when, what was the guy's name, Eddie? You're not a federal employee, you work for me, you've got 30 days, or something like that. You guys are all smart. I'm not too dumb either. When I leave this room, somebody's head's going to be in my suitcase. Wilford Brimley was great, but anyway. It was Paul Newman and Sally Field.
That's right.
Yeah. Plus, I love Paul Newman's boat, didn't you, Manny? That big old wood Chris Craft. Just saying. I could see you in one of those. I could see you in a hacker craft.
If someone else is driving and I can just have a drink and sit in the sun, I'm all for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's an executive boat. That's what you use on Lake George when you're going to dinner and cocktails. You hop in your big hacker craft, your wood captain, and off you go. So Jeff, are we going to get much more vitriol in this election, or is this about as bad as it gets? What do you think tonight?
Well, let's do some debate guessing. What do you think the big takeaway is going to be tomorrow morning? What's everyone going to be talking about?
I think it'll end up being one side likes one guy and one side likes the other. Of course, my right-wing people are already telling me that Joe can't make it through. He's going to fall asleep, and
all this kind of, I'm like, what are you guys talking about, for God's
sake?
Yeah,
that's crazy. Talk about raising the bar for performance. I mean, you take a inarticulate man like Trump, and let's face it, he's no orator. You know, so a debate logically doesn't seem to be his best venue. And obviously, you know, Biden doesn't, you know, impress as being quick on his feet either, but they sure are lowering the bar for Biden by continuing to speak to
Jeff. Can I
is there any percentage or any sort of analytical, you know, data out there that shows the percentage of people that actually swing from these debates? Because I'm willing to bet the same people before the debate are going to vote the same way after, no matter how it goes.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question right
away.
Well,
here's that's a good question. And here, the last debate the last presidential debate had 84 million people watch it. The over-under on this debate is at 90 million right now. So that implies that, because of the celebrity, I guess, and the vitriol and when I say over-under, I mean that, you know, Betfair in England is taking bets on this right now. This is a booked wager that you can play. So over the 90 million is the over-under, and you know, that they're making the assumption that more people are watching because it's Trump and everyone hates each other. But at the same time, and I know a lot of the smart money, because I follow the political bettors, and that's part of what we do on our podcast, the political trade, the smart money now is betting the under, because they're going on the premise that, to answer your question, Mandy, that the middle is smaller. Nate Silver in 2016 identified the middle, the undecided voters, as being at 10 million, and the new data is suggesting undecided voters are down to 7 million. And as of today, 1 million people have already voted, right? So with a smaller middle, and most people having made up their minds already, you know, that why would we exceed the last debate attendance by 6 million? So that's why the smart money is going on the under 90 million. I don't have a call on that one.
I was going to ask you guys. I was asking you guys how many votes are available to be changed, and I was going to guess between 5 and 10. So that 7 number doesn't
right on the money. Yeah.
I think everybody. We only got 30 seconds. I'm going to say that everybody wants Trump to start insulting Biden. They want to see how he reacts. This is like a punch. This is like a prize fight. There's nothing to do with the debate.
I think you're right. I wonder about the fact, since we know so much about these guys, because Biden was vice president for 8 years and Trump has been president for 4 years. Like, I have no interest in watching this. Because I know their policies. I know their debate style. There's nothing new for me to learn or see, and it's just going to be an embarrassment. And I really don't have a lot of interest, to be honest.
I'm sort of with you.
Sad.
Well, I mean,
true. Sad but true.
But it's like the price fight you don't want to watch. I mean, you got to talk about it in the morning, right?
That's right. I'll be watching baseball, and I'll have it on the background, and I'll be able to talk about it.
I'll tell you when we come in. You know, Trump is going to call him Sleepy Joe, and then what's Biden going to say? I mean, does he have his retort? Is he going to stand there with his mouth open? Does he have something to say, or is he going to say, "You want to go in the back room right now, or do you want to wait a while?" I mean, there's going to be some response. SP futures.
Well, Biden will. I think the big thing to look for is how effectively he delivers his planned one-liners.
Right.
You know, Trump is a little less prone to that. No one's going to be feeding him lines to say because, you know, he doesn't take advice, which is of course not a good thing. But Biden's going to come in with a pocketful of one-liners that have been planned, and you know, whereas Kamala Harris telescopes them, you could see him coming half a mile away as she's sitting to get ready to deliver that planned one-liner. We'll see how well Biden does doing that.
SP Futures down 2. Back tomorrow. Good job, Jeff. Always fun. Back tomorrow.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708 708-
403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.